You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
To come and save her, better believe it, get on her knees and pray her, then pray her, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right, when you do wrong, when to turn right, but you turn all the way, let.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Wow, we are so happy you joined us today. Thank you so much. Oh, my goodness. Hello. We're welcoming all our friends to listen to this beautiful conversation we're about to have today. And I'll ask our guest, would you please introduce yourself to us?
Rachel Sewell. And I live in Kansas City, Missouri, and I'm excited to chat with you.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for saying yes to our request.
You are welcome.
Well, we invited you because we love you and appreciate you and your wisdom and knowledge. And during these difficult times, have you noticed social media, anecdotal evidence, the news? It seems like there's a lot of sickness going around, right?
There is, yes. There really is, yeah. More mm-hmm. than there used to be, I think. It's not just our imagination. Because I try to look not at what it seems like, but more, mm-hmm. you know, what is the data showing us. So I'll start with the one that gives me nightmares, and that's norovirus. The one where you feel nauseated and throw up, and it's just awful. That one is actually, as far as I know, and I want to also preface and say I do not have a science background or medical. I'm just a mom doing her best to keep me and my kids healthy. But
yes.
from what I've learned, norovirus usually does not have long-term effects. So it's not scary in the sense like you're going to get norovirus and then you need to watch out for long-term or even short-term side effects down the road, like months and years from now. So it doesn't scare me in that sense. It just, I hate the feeling of feeling nauseated. And I'm only speaking in my experience of kids and people who don't have other health conditions going on. So I only want to talk about, you know, an average healthy person. It doesn't scare me long term. I just hate it so much. So that's the one I'm starting with. That one is at an all-time high from the last 10 years at least. I want to say it's the highest it's been in 10 years. So that, Dawn, that has me doing things that I don't normally do, like microwaving my takeout and putting it in the air fryer for 4 minutes for 165 degrees. And, you know, maybe even avoiding takeout. I'm someone who loves going through a drive-through and eating in the car, but I'm like, can I wait a month maybe to do that, to indulge in that, you know, things like that. So that. And of course, like we always hear the advice, I'm skipping the advice about washing your hands because I feel like your audience already knows that.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many people don't do that, but I think your audience is smart and knows to do that. So there's all that too. Another thing I do for norovirus is I use hypochlorous acid for my hand sanitizer, HOCl. HOCl is the shorthand for that. I use that for surface cleaner in my home, but I also, it's gentle on skin, it's safe for skin, and so I spray my kids' hands with that when we aren't somewhere where we can wash our hands, and it's just as effective as bleach, but it's it doesn't give me the migraine from the fumes like bleach does. It's just, it's my favorite. So that's what I do for norovirus. And then for, what are the other four in that plot? COVID is yes. still with us, and we're in a wave right now.
Yes.
Our 10th wave of the last 5 years. So we can circle back on that, because that could take, you know, 5 podcast episodes to talk about. And then flu is at a 15-year high, I believe.
Yes.
The highest mm-hmm. it's been. Those numbers are just off the chart, really bad. And then help me with, what is the fourth?
RSV.
RSV, yes. Is still
and up. Bird flu, yeah. right? We've added, now it's, I guess, a pentapandemic yes. because we have yes. bird flu and we have RSV to think about.
Yes, and bird flu is coming. And as someone who a couple years ago had a virus hit my family, it wasn't even any of those things, and it still knocked us out for a couple of weeks. It was
wow.
probably, I don't know how to pronounce it, adenovirus, adenovirus. It was probably that.
Mm-hmm.
So even, I mean, winter is just a whole mix of things because mm-hmm. of lots of factors. People are gathering inside more. The weather is, and I'm talking about in North America, but the weather is more dry. Mm-hmm. Not the weather, the people's houses are drier.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that humidity, viruses don't like humidity, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So if your house is dry, the viruses are thriving and jumping from one person to another more. So there's all these different factors going on. And so COVID doesn't really care if it's winter or summer.
Right.
COVID mm-hmm. is going to peak when it wants to peak. You know, there's some patterns we can see, but it's up and down when it wants to be. But then flu, usually people can predict, okay, October to April, generally, especially December, January, February, that's usually when flu season peaks. So there's more prediction on that. So even before the pandemic started in 2020, I would do things a little differently in the winter than I did in the summer as far as like precautions I would take.
Sure.
Because I didn't want to have to mess with it being sick. I just, you know, didn't want the hassle of it. But now mm-hmm. I'm extra motivated for a variety of reasons because I am self-employed. I don't have any time off.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's like the short-term motivation. I just don't want to be, you know, I don't want to have the hassle, the unpaid time off of work, the feeling cruddy. Like, I just don't want any of that. And then there's the long-term motivation of, hey, we don't know what we have predictions, but we don't know for sure what each individual is going to experience after the fact, after they get a virus, especially one like flu or COVID. So that's kind of my mm-hmm. personal motivation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have to say that we don't know what these things do to children or vulnerable people,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you hear people say, oh, they had the flu, it wasn't that bad. Well, you weren't 2 years old, or
right.
you weren't 90 years old, or
right.
you weren't someone who has a pre-existing condition or a vulnerability. Also,
mm-hmm.
you don't know what vulnerability you have.
Right.
See, there are people walking around right
until
now who are the picture
late.
Of health, and there's all kinds of things mm-hmm. happening in their body. They may not know about
mm-hmm.
that.
Yes.
And so I think, but then, to me, the biggest thing is it's not just about you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole
mm-hmm.
world. We're called to care, love one another. We're called
mm-hmm.
to care for the least of these. And so, you know, even if you could live through one of these, I don't know why you would want to catch it or what would be appealing
mm-hmm.
about suffering with it, but even if you could make it through, maybe you would pass it on to somebody who couldn't.
Right.
And so there's a lot of compassion and community care
mm-hmm.
and empathy that we should be showing during these times. And you did a wonderful job of laying out the problem for us. I want to mention, too, because you said it, and I think we need to say it again, COVID's not over, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. And I think that we right. need to, I mean, because I see people posting things like during COVID or back right. when we had COVID or back, mm-hmm. in, you know, and I'm like, ooh, what? I mean, the data mm-hmm. is showing us that people, hospitals are filling up. In mm-hmm. certain places, they're full of people that have COVID and respiratory illnesses. So I would really want to say that because I think some people will be surprised to hear that COVID's not over. And it's not just a mild cold or no worse than the flu.
Right.
And then there is long COVID, right? We do mm-hmm. know that some people develop long COVID and then suffer interminably. So I just want...
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And I think we have to put those things mm-hmm. out there. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad you said that because what I do is, and a lot of people do, is differentiate between... Okay, there was the COVID emergency phase.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that was from early 2020 until it depends on how you define it. So I'm comfortable with maybe someone who says the emergency phase was until adults could get the vaccine. I don't define it that way. I felt like until the youngest of us
right.
could get it, mm-hmm. that was the emergency. And even then, only... Even today, if a baby is younger than 6 months old, they still cannot get the vaccine.
Right.
So anytime from early 2020 to, let's say, August 2022, that was when 6 months old, six-month-old kids could be vaccinated. So that was when a good chunk of people could have at least some protection. And we knew by August 2022, we knew a lot more than we did in the super early days of just like navigating in the dark and, you know, mask shortages. And I know I personally didn't know the first thing about air purifiers. I had never heard of far UV, which we'll get to. There, you know, so many things we were just in the dark. And the only tool we really had at work at the time, I'm talking on an individual level, was stay away from people. You know, that was like the best advice, and not everyone could do that. I had the privilege of doing that because of the type of work my spouse and I did, and also the age of my kids. They didn't have to be in school. And so because of that, I could isolate, but that's not sustainable for years and years for most people. And so that was the emergency phase. That's what I'm calling it. And then after that, the disease, the virus, the disease is still just as dangerous, but we have more tools and knowledge now if we will learn it and put it into practice. So it is a really, really different world than it was early on. But if someone is either in, like, purposefully ignoring what to do or just doesn't know what they don't know, then you're just as susceptible as you were at the beginning because the COVID itself has not changed. But, I mean, of course, I could get into, like, how the virus mutates and evolves. That's not what I mean. But, like, it is still dangerous to human bodies. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But we know more if we will learn and then employ it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, because we have tools now, but we also have wisdom. And, you know, when 2020, my big sister's a nurse, and she said to me, she said, you be careful, you watch that baby, because this pneumonia is really bad. It's eating people. Like, people are, you know, not coming back from it. And then we found out there was such a thing as COVID. But people didn't have any tools, right? Everybody was sanitizing their hands and still breathing in an airborne virus. But now we do have tools, and we have to make peace with the fact that we do have tools we can use, and we must use them. We just must use them.
Yeah.
So let's talk about a tool. Everyone's going to wash their hands. We're all going to wash our hands. We're all for washing our hands. But if all we do is wash our hands, that might not be enough. So we do have a huge tool that all of these viruses that we're talking about, you know, they just announced a new virus in bats coming from China, and we don't know what bird flu is going to do, but we do know there is one tool that seems to be very hardy in standing up to all of these things, mm-hmm. and that's a mask. So can we talk about masks a little bit? And I know they've been politicized, and there have been a lot of... We're not talking about any of that. We're simply talking about, do masks work?
Right. And yes, they do. Yes. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, they absolutely work. And the when you choose to use high-quality masks, they work even better. So for sure, if use whatever mask you can get your hands on, that's a starting point. And then go from there and try to refine it. If you've been using only surgical masks, like the blue kind, sometimes they come in different colors, but the blue kind that go on your ears, or a cloth mask or something, that's great that you were doing something, but then try to upgrade. And can you upgrade to a KN95 or KF94 ear loop mask? Great. Upgrade to that. Then can you upgrade to a head strap kind, like an N95? Great. Do that. Some people, believe it or not, it goes even above that. You can go to, like, what looks like a gas mask, you know. You can even go up from there.
P100s, so, the papers, capers.
And then take it up to the next level and get fit tests. That is one of the best things someone can do. I just did it for the first time very recently, like 2 weeks ago, and it was challenging. It was tiring to go through the process, but it was so worth it because now I have, you know, I love data. I have actual hard facts, like this mask fits my face well. This mask does not fit my face well. This one is protecting me. This one is kind of protecting me from, like, if someone coughed near me, it would catch some of it, but it's not going to catch, like, the tiny airborne aerosol. So I loved knowing that, but that is, like, there's stair steps, you know, to get more and more and more protection, but doing something is better than doing nothing, and you're protecting people around you. So yes, masks do work, and they work very, very well, and they are the absolute, I feel strongly they are the best protection on an individual level.
Right.
If you can do it. And then there's all the caveats, like, what if you have a baby who is too young to mask? What if you have a toddler like mine who rips the mask off of his face? still learning. You know, what do you do when you have a situation like that? And then all those things you can do, which we'll talk about, also help the person who is wearing the mask to have even more protection around them. So, and also, you don't, most people don't prefer to mask in their home. So what do you do if you live with someone, a roommate or a family member who either doesn't want to take precautions or has, you know, high exposure at their job or school or something like that? There's things you can do within your home when you, obviously, you don't want to sleep in a mask. You don't want to, you know, you need to eat. People just don't want a mask in their home. So outside your home, absolutely, anytime you can wear a mask, that is awesome. And there's other things you can do to limit exposure inside your home, which we can also talk about.
Well, thank you so much for giving us that knowledge and insight, because I want us to take a minute and have an action step. That's really important. We call that the get off the couch step around here. You know, because you can listen to the sound of my lovely voice and my wise guest and then do absolutely nothing, or you can do a transformational step, and so we're going to do that. You know, even if you stopped masking, you just didn't mask anymore, we don't even know what the reason is, it doesn't matter, you can start again. See, there's just no limit on that. You can start today. You can say, you know, when I go to the grocery store or when I go out and about. Now, I personally mask everywhere. I mask all the time. But we have rural geography and remote work and homeschooling, and so we really don't mix with very many people at all. And when we do, they are hardcore still COVIDing too. So maybe you quit masking. We're not mad at you. We're ready to welcome you back. Come on and put your mask on. Don't catch the flu if you don't need to. Don't catch RSV or COVID or norovirus or bird flu or bat flu or whatever this is going to be. Just put your mask back on. Don't have to make a big post on it on social media or a whole bunch of fanfare. Just wear your mask. Wear your mask. Even if you're not doing it for you, do it for the people you care about, for other people who might be vulnerable.
100%. And then
if you are masking, we want to thank you. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for caring about others, rising above popular culture and public opinion, and continuing to mask. We appreciate you. I went to get Novavax yesterday, and I went to Costco, and there were lots of people in masks. Just lots. I mean, like 20. And I made sure to thank them and praise them and bless them because we appreciate you. And so if you've been wearing a surgical mask, good. Thank you. Thank you for caring enough to do that. Now, let's consider. Just consider. You don't have to. We're not going to drive to your house and make you wear a different mask. But maybe it's time to explore the KN95s or the N95s. If you've been wearing a KN95, good for you. Thank you. That's so kind. Could we persuade you to look into the N95s? Right? So just take a minute and think about what your mask plan will be. What are you going to do about masking? This is your moment. Before you go away and get busy and distracted, this is your moment to think about masking. And I want to ask a question about masking. Do you have advice to help teach children how to mask? Many of them are vulnerable, yeah. Very vulnerable, and so it's a great thing if we can persuade them to wear a mask. Do you have any insights or advice about that?
Yes, I do.
Good.
First, you may already know this about your child. You may know, are they sensory sensitive? Do they complain about tags on their clothing? Do they say their sock is sitting weird? You know, or are they sensory avoidant where they, sorry, I said the same thing. Are they sensory seeking? Are they sensory seeking where they don't really notice if they have an itchy shirt? They don't complain about that, but they might want really tight hugs and want you to squeeze them and things like that. Or are they somewhere in the middle? They're just kind of average with that. And that might predict how they tolerate mask wearing, and it might not. So there'll be some trial and error. So for some kids, they succeed with slowly building up, practicing more minutes, more hours in their own home. Maybe they get to watch their favorite show while they wear a mask. Maybe bribery works with them or whatever. None of those things work with my kids, but I have heard good stories about you just build up a tolerance for it in your house where there's no risk. If they take it off, it's fine. You just praise them for how long they've done it, and that's great. So that's one approach that I've heard works well. And then with my youngest, that never, ever, ever worked at all. So what we had to do instead was we had to find some indoor place that was appealing to him, like a toy store or somewhere fun he wanted to go and say, and this would also work, for parks, if you're a family that masks outside, you could do this at the playground. So if they have the mask on, they stay at the playground. If they take the mask off, you leave. And it's the same thing you would do if you're teaching your kid to wear a helmet when they ride a scooter or something. Helmet goes off, you aren't riding your scooter anymore or your bicycle or whatever. So if we take it seriously, like we take helmet wearing seriously, then it's just a boundary you set, like we're going to stay in this toy store as long as your mask is off, ready to take the mask off, then we'll leave, and you're not being I mean, they might have a meltdown about it, but you're not being mean about it. You're just saying, like, this is a safety issue. And that is, for my kid, that was more motivating because it was somewhere he wanted to be. But when he's in his own house, he doesn't compute, why would I wear a mask in my own house? Like, that doesn't make sense, because there's no, my kids need, like, a reason for something. They aren't, because I said so, kids. You know, they're very strong-willed, which I love about them. But it makes it more challenging, you know, with stuff like this. So, yeah, that's, those are just some of the tips. And then you can go from there, like, the more comfortable the mask or the better fitting, that also will help. So I know a lot of toddlers won't tolerate your typical kid mask, but they will tolerate the one that's called a flow mask, F-L-O. Mm-hmm. And it is a reusable mask, and you just change the filter. And that one has a special head strap called a halo strap. You can get additionally to add on to it. And it just makes the pressure of the mask kind of more evenly distributed around the kid's head, like the back of their head. And so it is just more comfortable. It doesn't press on them as much. So that is one route to go if you try the disposable masks and they aren't really well tolerated or they're falling off or whatever. So look into flow masks. If you have anywhere from a two-year-old to maybe even an eight-year-old, nine-year-old, sometimes they'll fit more petite nine-year-old faces.
Oh, this is so helpful. Really, it's wonderful to have this conversation with you and to talk in this way. I think right now is a moment that we get to make some decisions. We get to choose some things that we're going to do. We can't control everybody else. We can't, you know, make other people do what we want them to do. But as for me and my house, and if you want to live your life, the very best way is to live it and be healthy in a healthy body. And masks can help with that. You know, we're not telling you to just sit in the house and be sad and bored and lonely, but we are telling
and
you.
And Dawn, I'm glad you said that, because I think if we have a reframe after this horrible, unnecessary politicizing of mask wearing that happened starting in 2020, if we reframe it and
mesh covers and mask chains.
I just bought one on Etsy that I love so much. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
we did too. We ordered some. They're beautiful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So beautiful. It makes it fun. So if instead of demonizing it, like you said, if we reframe it and realize it is a tool of freedom, not a tool of oppression, it lets you do, well, okay, maybe not everyone. Some people feel like they can go do whatever they want to do and go wherever they want to go, but recognizing there are people who have health issues or they are immunocompromised and their only other choice was to isolate, the mask is their ticket. Mm-hmm. And the more people that mask, the more they can be safe to go where they need to go. Yeah, it's just another accessory. And if you have... Mm-hmm. You have a kid who is going to school in person and is the only kid who's masking right now, or at least in the minority, which is almost a guarantee right now. You can teach your kid, and maybe even have your kid share this with their classmates, that wearing a mask is different, yes, but it's just like any other difference. So maybe one kid wears glasses, maybe one kid is in a wheelchair, maybe one kid is, you know, has a different hairstyle. Like, it's just all, some of those I mentioned are purely just expressions of how someone looks, and some are actually accommodations for disabilities. But I'm including glasses in that. I mean, not having perfect vision is technically a disability, and we don't even think twice about someone wearing glasses to correct their vision. And masks sometimes are worn by a child who has health issues, and sometimes it's worn purely as a prevention strategy for a child who doesn't have any health issues. But either way, it's just a difference. And if we can start to think of it like that instead of, you know, othering the kids who wear masks. I think that'll be really helpful. Mm-hmm. And Dawn, can I also go back, if you don't mind, to your wonderful action steps?
Yes, please. Yes.
Told everyone, I loved what you said and I loved how practical it was. And can I add some other practical steps?
Absolutely.
To that?
Sure.
So you were saying, start, if you haven't been masking, you can start masking today. I love that. I agree with that. And I want to go even more practical and tell someone
sure.
exactly step by step what they can do right now. They can either pause if they think they're going to forget and do it right now, or do it when you are done listening to this. Go to the website called covidactionmap.org,
mm-hmm.
covidactionmap.org. It's an actual Google map, and then you're going to zoom in where you live, and there's all these little pins of organizations that are in your area. Zoom out if you have to. If you don't live in a city, you might have to zoom out a little bit and see that maybe there's one that's 1 hour away, but there might, you might live in a big city where there's like three or four organizations, and look for a mutual aid organization called a mask block, spelled B-L-O-C without the K, and click on that, find their Instagram handle, their website, whatever it is, their contact information. Send them a message right now, this moment, and say, hey, I would like to pick up a mask from your drop site, or, you know, wherever you have a mask. I want to start wearing a mask today. Where can I get one? Someone will reply to you, or you might have to go to their Instagram and see. There might be an address of where you can just go pick up a mask from a basket that's like in a bookstore, or maybe an outside free pantry or something. And you go pick up a mask, start wearing it today, take note of what type of mask it is, maybe take a picture of it. And if you have the budget for it, order that same mask today, right after you pick it up, and plan to replace it. So someone else can wear it too. And if that mask fits you well, maybe keep some of those masks you order for future use. But that's how you can get one today. You don't even have to wait on shipping. You can just, can try. A lot of them will have a sample pack because you don't know what's going to fit your face well. And you can pick up a sample pack or grab a couple different varieties for your whole family. And then if you can afford to, like I said, replace it later, if you can, with a donation. If you can't, don't worry about it. That is what it's there for. That's why we have these mutual aid organizations. So that's something you can do today. And then that's really the extent of my step-by-step guide. But I wanted to add to what you were saying about where should you start masking.
Right.
And I love the idea of taking, I mean, if you're an all-in person, great. Start masking everywhere. No one's going to tell you not to do that. But if you want to take it one step at a time and ease into it, we understand and we encourage that too. So start with places where you won't feel as weird, if that's something that concerns you. If you feel awkward being the only person masking, don't start by showing up at your office being the only one masking. Don't start by showing up Sunday morning to your worship service being the only masker, because that might freak you out and then you never do it again. So start by, like you said, going to the grocery store, or if you have a doctor's appointment or an eye doctor appointment, wear a mask to that, because especially at a doctor's office, you are more at risk because you're sitting in a waiting room with people who have all kinds of contagious illnesses. And that is a place where vulnerable people have no choice but to go to. So if I am immunocompromised, I don't have to go to a movie theater. I might want to, and I have every right to do that, but I don't have to do it. But I do have to go, for example, to a doctor's appointment, and it would be really helpful if other people around me, other patients, are also masking. So I would start, if nothing else, at medical appointments or if you're visiting someone in the hospital, throw a mask on. If you can do the grocery store too, that is a really great place to start because it's very short. You can just pop in, pop out, and assess, like, how did that feel? Is that okay? Did I tolerate that okay? You know, yeah, that's where I would start.
That's beautiful. Well, while we take this commercial break, you, our friends who are listening, can do that. Go to the map, look for the mask block, get arrangements to pick up a mask and get masks. And if you need to order more masks, you've already been masking, it's time to mask, you want to upgrade your mask, you can do that while we do this. We'll be right back.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage, scroll down to Featured Podcast, click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come, another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Protect and prevent. Those are two great words, and we're talking about them today with someone who has wisdom and knowledge and can joyfully share it with us. We're not here for gloom and doom and to make you, you know, have angst and misery. We just want to share with you things that we know will help keep you safe from what's going on right now. And to that end, I just wanted to share something with you that I was really interested in the other day, that one of the largest school systems in Ohio was saying that at Nationwide Children's Hospital, 47, a little bit more, but 47% of the children who are tested are testing positive for the flu. So this isn't imaginary. It's not like we're trying to make you scared of a, oh, boogeyman that's out there. No, no. And I want to share this quotation with our friends who are listening. Zabrowski. This woman's name is Ms. Zabrowski. I don't consider myself COVID cautious. I consider myself COVID competent, Zabrowski said. Cautious would imply that I have an unreasonable fear of something. I do not have an unreasonable fear of this disease. We want to be COVID competent. We want to be competent to protect and prevent in this very strange viral age, and we have exactly the right guest to help us do that. Would you please reintroduce yourself to our friends who are listening?
Absolutely. My name is Rachel Sewell, a mom who accidentally became a clean air advocate.
I'm glad you're here. What does clean air mean? I think there's an idea that if you go outside, you just get you some fresh air. But what's the difference between fresh air and clean air?
I used to think clean air just meant outside air, too. And then I'm learning or realizing, hey, we spend the majority of our lives indoors. And indoors can be very polluted as well from things like our gas oven or just carbon dioxide we are exhaling. And then as you and I have been talking about today, it can also be filled with virus particles that can make the other people sharing the home with sick, and we want to avoid that. So so clean air is just a really shorthand way of saying indoor air quality. And for me, my main focus in that is preventing the transmission of viruses. But through that process of learning, I've realized, hey, we would also really benefit from cleaning the indoor air for a variety of other reasons. When we have more oxygen because we've cracked a window open and our home can, or classrooms can be better ventilated and let in more oxygen and let out more carbon dioxide we are exhaling, then guess what? We have less brain fog. We, test scores go up because kids can focus better. It's so interesting. So there's all these side benefits. There's so much tragedy with these urban fires and wildfires the past few years, especially very recently with the LA fires. And I had no idea how damaging that could be to people's health. And so I'm learning more about that. Where I live, we have not had to deal with that, but it could happen any day without warning, you know? And so the more we're prepared with the knowledge and air purifiers and things like, and masks that actually filter the smoke particles out, better off we are. So there's a slew of reasons why learning about indoor air quality and how to improve it is important. And a really helpful analogy for me is thinking about how most people would not drink untreated water. And I mean, I know not everyone filters their water themselves. They might drink tap water, but we all know and we take for granted that all of our municipal water has been treated at a water treatment plant. And so because of that, we don't have cholera and dysentery to deal with in this country, at least, you know. And we just kind of have taken that for granted, at least I have. I would never just go to, I'm trying to think of an example, like I wouldn't go to a creek that I don't know anything about and just like fill up my water bottle, you know.
Right, yeah, so, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So we do that, but we only drink, what is it? I'm going to get this wrong. I think it's like 2 to 3 liters of water a day. Hmm. But we inhale, oh goodness, I'm going to get the number wrong. It's a lot more. Just take my word for it. It's something like 20,000 liters of air per day. And we just walk around inhaling this air that has not been filtered. And once your eyes are open to that, it is so interesting, and you can start taking action. Again, taking action, like you were saying, once you know better, you can start doing better. And Dawn, for someone like you, and I'm glad that you shared that your lifestyle right now, you can work from home, educate from home, you know, you don't have to necessarily focus on you keeping your germs away from your child. Like, that is not a pressing issue for you, and I'm so grateful for that. But you also are going to want to learn about air purifiers, because what if one day the winds shift and there's a wildfire in Canada that comes to where you are, you know, like you're gonna be scrambling for, like, oh, I need to learn about activated carbon filters and things like this, you know. So,
and you'll feel better.
We can,
We have a house full of air purifiers and far UVC. And
that's great. So you're already on top of it.
Even with Hurricane Helene and all these other things, I mean, that still changes the atmosphere, right? So breathing clean air is beautiful, even if you don't actually have an active pathogen in your midst. So I'm really glad you said that. Could we talk about far UVC? I mean, there's so much discussion of it right now, and I want to make sure we do talk about air purifiers and far UV.
Yes, absolutely. So, goodness. I am an enthusiast, but I want to be clear that I am not an expert, so I will do my best. So the germicidal UVC has been around at least, I mean, the first I heard of it being on the scene was in the 50s, 40s or 50s, when there were measles outbreaks in classrooms, and they installed upper room UVC where it didn't ever, the light never touched the kids and the teachers' skin or eyes, but it just stayed in the upper part of the room. And when air that had measles particles in it, pathogens, would go up toward the ceiling, it would get zapped. And no, that is not the technical term, but that's what I'm calling it. It would get zapped
by the
UVC, and then it would circulate back down, and, you know, it would be inactivated. And that prevented outbreaks in classrooms that had that installed, which is amazing. And then I don't remember the timeline, but far UVC is safe to be around skin and eyes because it is further down. It's shorter wavelengths on that light spectrum. And so the UV that most people have heard about, UVA, UVB, that is what gives you sunburns. That's what can damage your eyes. That's what you want to avoid. That is higher up on the light spectrum. And so it penetrates into your skin and causes skin cancer, just all kinds of bad stuff. So when people hear UV, sometimes if they haven't learned about RUV, well, also I'll say UVC is at 254 nanometers, and you do not want to come in contact with that either. So if you've seen, I don't know if you've seen, like, there's one brand called Phone Soap. You can, like, put your phone in a box, and it zaps it with UVC. You might have installed in your air ducts at home, in your HVAC, you might have UVC. You might have, where else? Some air purifiers have a feature where UVC is on the inside, and it's claiming that it is further cleaning the air as it passes through the inside of the air purifier. All of that, those examples are UVC where you don't want to see it or be around it because it can
Right, okay.
Right. That is 254 nanometers. Then you get far UV, and that is called far because it's farther down on the light spectrum, shorter wavelength. It does not penetrate the outer layer of your skin, like the dead skin cells. It does not go beyond your tear duct layer on your eyes, and so it is safe to be around for animals, humans, good to go. You can be around it. And because you can be around it, it is so effective because multiple people can be in a room together sharing the air, and the far UV is working continuously to clean the air. That's one thing that is really important to realize is I don't want someone to be like, hey, I cleaned this room for you. It's safe to come in. Maybe like a UVC robot came in and disinfected a hospital room and then left, and then humans can come in. Great. Okay, but if I'm sharing the air with someone who's continuously exhaling and their pathogens are now I'm breathing them in, that's not okay. That's how you get sick from, you know, from people. So a combination of far UV, air purifiers, cracking the windows open, opening them wide, and turning a ceiling fan on if you can, like all these layers combined, or do one if you can only do one, of course. Always do at least what you can do. That all combines to continuously clean the air. And that's a message I want to get even to my folks who are in the COVID competent, I love that phrase, COVID competent category. I want them to realize, just like a mask does, you're continuously cleaning the air. You're not just cleaning it once per hour and then calling it good, because you're constantly introducing new pathogens into the air. So you've got to constantly clean them. If you, you know, if your kid throws up and you bleach that area, you only have to do it once and you're good to go. But if your kid keeps throwing up, you keep cleaning it. And just like if your kid has influenza A and is breathing out all day, like humans do, you've got to keep cleaning that air. And that's why we talk about air changes per hour.
Yeah.
And the CDC told us the minimum air changes per hour was five times per hour in any given space. You've got to change it five times, but that keeps increasing as we learn more. So then we heard it was 6 to 12. Well, actually I've seen it written 6 to 12 plus. So the more you can do, the better. 6 to 12 air changes per hour or more. And the more you can do, the more likely you are to keep someone's exhalations away from your inhalation.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful way to describe it. Thank you so much for teaching me about this.
Yeah.
Far UV, I'll have to say. Far UV. Is there a way to make Far UV portable or wearable?
Yeah. So portable, there are a few companies I know of who make devices that are portable. And there's one company that makes a device right now that is wearable. And I'll talk about all of those. So I'm someone who, give me a power bank and I can make a lot of things portable that aren't really designed to be. I have taken large air purifiers. I've taken tripod mounted Far UV before and turned it into something that's smaller and portable and fits in my bag just if I have a power bank that I can plug it into. But generally, the ones that are actually marketed to be portable include Nuket torches, come in a pack of four. I'm not sure if they're being sold right now in North America, but they have been in the past, so there's some people who own those. And you can kind of place them around, and they are a smaller output, so they don't have a big range. And all the ones I'm going to talk about are like that. They just kind of only reach maybe 100 square feet around you at the most. There's another one by Eden Park, and that one is also portable. I'm not sure what's the range. I don't remember the range on that, but it's similar. And then, let's see. BioAbundance have a portable one. I feel like, let me come back to that. But then Far UV Technologies, their name is actually Far UV, so I have to always differentiate, are we talking about the company or are we talking about, you know, all of that. And I have done some freelance work for Far UV, so I'm more familiar with it. But I try to familiarize myself with all of the brands because I'm just an advocate and a customer myself for all of the brands. So Far UV Technologies has the only wearable device. And you can wear it around your neck like a lanyard. You can wear it on a crossbody bag, like on the strap, in a little pouch of any color of the rainbow you could imagine. Not just rainbow, like pink, all kinds of colors. It's awesome. So that one is called the Krypton MVP, like most valuable player, but it stands for Mobile Virus Protection. And it has a battery that lasts anywhere from 5 to 6 hours. But again, give me a power bank and I'll make that last even longer. So that one, I have noticed something really interesting. Not only is it convenient, but I don't get questions or weird looks when I'm wearing it like I do with air purifiers or masks. There's something about it that people just, I don't know what people think it is. They either don't notice it or they just think it's some device. I don't know. But if you're someone who is worried about standing out or like getting harassed or something, this is a good option because anecdotally, lots and lots of customers that I've talked to, no one has ever mentioned that they've gotten harassed or even questioned about it. So that is a plus for using Far UV. Silent. Air purifiers run the spectrum from quiet, like clean air kits, to, you know, PC fan air purifiers to, it sounds like a jet plane is taking off. I mean, like there's a whole, a whole spectrum of noise for that. But one thing that I like about Far UV is that it is silent and subtle, but still working continuously to inactivate those pathogens and mold spores and allergens that are all around you in the air.
So, okay, if you're walking or moving, is it still killing viruses around you?
It is, and I want to be clear, unlike a mask that works the same whether you move to a new space or stay in one space, the Far UV does take time. It's not an instant kill. It does take time. So yes, moving is both a good idea because then you're like getting away from maybe a cloud of pathogens that you just walked into. I'm not saying don't move around because of this, but yeah, you do need to keep in mind that it takes, I don't know an actual exact time frame, but anywhere from 30 seconds minimum, you know, to on up to some minutes to inactivate the pathogens around you. But think about air purifiers. It's the same thing. Like, if you're getting anywhere from 5 to 12 air changes per hour, that's only like every 12 minutes you get new air around you. So it's all of these tools kind of have that.
And that's why, you know, I really believe in a multi-pronged strategy, right? I'm thinking about, we're indigenous, and so I always think tribally, probably. But I was thinking about, you know, you wouldn't go into battle with just one arrow or one spear and hope for the best. You would bring whatever you needed to use to be victorious. And so this conversation has given us primarily a place to start thinking, this is real, this is happening, and we must protect and prevent. You know, not believing that something is over doesn't mean it's over. Wanting something to be over doesn't mean it's over. And so just saying, oh, well, you know, that's over. Okay, but, you know, we're seeing measles. We're seeing all kinds of things happening. And so we want you to take some action steps. You know, we've introduced you to some tools. Do some research. You know, do some, and I don't mean do your own homemade research. I mean, read reputable resources and listen to reputable experts and decide to make a plan, make a strategy. We want you to do that. How will you stay safe? This is happening now. So it's not like, oh, 6 weeks from now, I'll sit down and think about this. No, right now, this is happening today. How will you protect and prevent these things from impacting you and your family? Our expert today has been so gracious with her time and knowledge, and we just thank you so much for joining us today and being so, so kind to share what it is that you know and the views that you have.
Thank you. I was so happy to chat with you.
Well, it's been absolutely lovely. As we close, what do you want us to know that we don't already know?
I want to encourage you. Maybe this is a reminder for some of you that you need to hear, and maybe this is a new concept, but I really want to encourage everyone to not, this is a cliche, but not let perfect be the enemy of good. And I don't want you to think, well, I have a first grader and she's going to bring home, you know, she's going to bring home illnesses left and right. There's nothing I can do. Okay, that's true, but could she maybe bring home one less virus per year, and wouldn't that help your life a little bit? Like, doing a little bit can help. And then I also want to encourage people to think about viral load, and that helped me a lot, because I had a kid who was in person school. It was very hard. It was really discouraging. It felt like I couldn't do anything to keep him from bringing his sicknesses to his little brother and to me. But then I had a mind shift, and it was like, hey, if I put air purifiers and have us wash our hands, you know, we might still get his cold or we might still get his illness, but it will be less severe because we didn't inhale as much of his pathogens. And that really helped me. Like, if I'm wearing a mask, but it's not that great of a mask, it's still better because I'm not getting as much of a viral load, and then my week of being sick is not as severe as if I had done nothing. So that's what I encourage everyone, do a little bit today, and then maybe tomorrow you'll have the strength to do a little bit more, or, you know, just build from that.
What a wonderful practical way to look at it. Thank you. That is, oh, wow, so helpful. So helpful. We don't want anyone overwhelmed, but we don't also want anyone getting sick. And you have helped us to strike a really nice balance between the two. Thanks for joining us today. I'm so glad we had this conversation.
Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you to all of our friends who listen. We love you. We appreciate you. And we can't wait until we're all together again for Conversations with Dawn Karima. I'll see you then.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.